a la huelga, compañero, no vayas a trabajar. Deja quieta la herramienta, que es la hora de luchar. A la huelga 10, a la huelga 100, a la huelga, madre, yo voy también. A la huelga 100, a la huelga 1000, yo por ellos, madre, y ellos por mí. Contra el gobierno del hambre nos vamos a levantar, todos los trabajadores, codo a codo con el pan. A la huelga 10, a la huelga 100, a la huelga, madre, yo voy también. A la huelga 100, a la huelga 1000, yo por ellos, madre, y ellos por mí. Desde el pozo y el arado, desde el torno y el telar, vivan los hombres del pueblo, a la huelga federal. A la huelga 10, a la huelga 100, a la huelga, madre, yo voy también. A la huelga 100, a la huelga 1000, yo por ellos, madre, y ellos por mí. Todos los pueblos del mundo, la mano nos van a dar para devolver a España su perdida libertad. A la huelga 10, a la huelga 100, a la huelga, madre, yo voy también. A la huelga 100, a la huelga 1000, yo por ellos, madre, y ellos por mí.
Now we are going to present the historical context of the exile, one of the greatest exiles of modern times. We will start with the Spanish Civil War, after that the Mediatic War and the International Brigades. We will finish with the exile and a couple of photographs. To start this visit, we will learn more about the context of the Civil War. In 1939 was installed the Second Republic in Spain after the elections. King Alfonso XIII had to exile himself and Spain ceased to be a monarchy. The year 1946 was a period of reforms. Social reforms like women's right to vote and the right to divorce. The agricultural reform linked to the redistribution of land. The educational reform in the fight against analphabetism. And the work reform. February 1936 was marked by the victory of the Popular Front, the coalition of the parties of the left, during the general elections that showed the beginning of the polarization between progressive and conservatory forces. The 17th of July 1936, the coup d'etat directed by General Franco turned into a fratricidal war up until 1939, in which the Francoist nationalists fought against the Republicans, defenders of the Second Republic. Did you know, during the Civil War, there was a real mediatic war. The propaganda posters were a fundamental tool after and during the Civil War. They were used by the Republican camps as well as the Francoist camp. During this period, there was a veritable war of images. The Phalanx was a far-right party in favour of national Catholicism. One of their pillars was the conservative values of the church. This party was founded by José Antonio Primero de Rivera with the intention of uniting the destiny of the country with an integralist vision of Catholicism. The Republican side, constituted by the strongly politicized people and armed by the Republic, was supported by the International Brigades. The International Brigades were communist volunteers in favor of freedom who decided to help the Spanish Republicans. They were in between 35,000 and 45,000 volunteers. France was the country who gathered the most important number of volunteers, approximating 9,000. Their objective was to save lives. Consequently, in the beginning, the majority of volunteers were GPs, and as time went on, more and more middle-class workers enrolled. The International Brigade saw through this fight the opportunity to stop the progression of fascism in the world. La Retirada is the name of the exile of Spanish Republicans defeated by the Francoists from the 27th of January until the 13th of February of 1939. It was one of the greatest exiles of modern times, The exile marked the beginning of the Second World War with the defeat of the Spanish Republic and the victory of Franco, helped by Mussolini and Hitler. As a result, 500,000 Republicans and volunteers of the International Brigades migrated to France, known as the Country of Human Rights, from January 1939. They went through the Pyrenees in dramatic weather conditions, fleeing from fascism and the fight. The weather conditions for this winter were one of the coldest of the 20th century. Despite the support of some mutual aid networks, the French government, out of fear, opted for a policy of isolation. Above all, it wanted to send refugees home as much as possible and was under a lot of pressure from Franco, who saw it as a way to keep political opponents out. Here is a testimony from a survivor of this mass exile. Jean Villamosa was 11 when he crossed the Pyrenees in the cold and in the fear to reach France after the fall of Barcelona in early 1939 and the victory of the Francoists. A proof engraved for life, tells the man, now 91 years old. Then we crossed the Pyrenees on foot, very slowly for 4 days. There were 16 of us, including 11 children aged 4 to 13, recalls Joe Villamosa. There were a lot of people fleeing up the mountains. We couldn't walk in the open because planes were strafing. We would stay in the woods, often in the freezing rain and sometimes sleeping on the frozen ground, hungry and in the dark, adds the one who always feels in his body and relives in his mind this terrible exile. Upon arrival, they were piled up onto the beaches of the Mediterranean and forced to build houses when they were later interned. To host this mass of political immigrants, the French government established the first camp on the beach of Argelès, the first concentration camp in the long list, which were built in the following years in the cities of the Mediterranean coast. The refugees were herded into these concentration camps and suffered from poor conditions. These people suffered from permanent humiliation by the French gendarmes, who made fun of them, although outside they were supported by the left and the anarchists. This act of xenophobia is just a prelude to many massacres who were committed during the Second World War. The exile represents the victory of fascism and shows the weakness of the European democracies who didn't help the Spanish Republic.
Todas las madres del mundo esconden su vientre tiemblo. Todas las madres del mundo esconden su vientre tiemblan y quisieran retirarse a Virginia.
At the end of the Spanish War, when the Francoists took Madrid and Barcelona, the last shields of the Republicans, these soldiers of freedom had to flee their own country. With them, foreign volunteers who realized what was going on in Europe at the time and that had come to help fight the rise of fascism also had to flee to France, known to be the land of human rights. In horrible conditions, more than 500,000 men and women crossed the Pyrenees during the winter of 1939. Upon arrival in France, they were placed in fields where cold, hunger, and disease reigned. The way they were depicted and treated is what we are going to explain today. Now, we can ask ourselves who these Republicans and Brigadiers were at the time. The Spanish Republicans are today a mixture of the left socialists, communists, and anarchists, but also supporters of the Popular Front government, who was Spain's legitimate government until Franco's coup d'etat. They fought for the abolition of the monarchy, for the distribution of land among all peasants, universal suffrage, secularism, and education for all. The Spanish Civil War was not just a national struggle. Soldiers from around the world came together to fight fascism in Europe. This is how the International Brigades were born. Allied to the Republican side, these militiamen from all countries came to support the Spaniards and fight for their moral values and against Nazi Germany and fascist Italy. These soldiers were volunteers and came from 50 different countries. It was more than 35,000 soldiers. They were communists, socialists, and anarchists, and among them celebrities such as French writer André Malraux and the American writer Ernest Hemingway. The Spanish Republicans created a new side. They resisted for 3 years, but in 1939 lost the cities of Madrid and Barcelona, and then the war. As the brigadiers left Spain, they were placed in camps. The best known brigadiers are those who, under the Spanish name International Brigades, fought alongside the Republicans against nationalist rebels during the Spanish Civil War between 1936 and 1939. We can take the examples of the Rivesaltes camps in France because it was where the Second World War began. The defeat of the Spanish Republicans fighting Franco and the fascists added to the inaction of European democracies and resulted in the migration of 500,000 Spaniards and volunteers from international brigades to France. In 1939, hundreds of thousands of people fled to France in dramatic conditions. When they arrived, they were given only tents and asked to build their own houses. The situation of these men, women, and children was dramatic. They thought France was the country of human rights, but realized they had made a mistake. There were some networks of French citizens to help these people, but the French government's policy was containment. The French wanted to return these people to their home countries as quickly as possible. Franco wanted the Spanish Republicans to go to France because it was a good way to pressure enemies and to not have opponents in his country. Furthermore, if these exiles had wanted to return again, they would have suffered repression and stigmatization in Spain. This allowed pressure to be exerted on the French government. These 500 thousands of men and women made up the majority of the boarding schools in the Rivesaltes camp between the Winter Convoy 1939 and November 1941. The French government locked the Spanish Republicans in camps. Among the captive were more than 5,000 German, Italian, Austrian, Hungarian, Polish, Hungarian anti-Nazi activists who had fled their country to fight fascism. At the signing of the German-Soviet Pact on August 1939, these heroes had to learn about Stalin's betrayal. Finally, Republicans and brigadiers were all treated in the same way upon their arrival in France. The French government decided not to worry about these people's fate. Thus, they were interned in fields where living conditions were terrible. These soldiers of freedom, warning Europe of what was going on, were not only ignored and not listened to, but they were also mistreated. Brigadiers, for the most part, suffered as much as the Republicans, or more, since they could not return to their countries. They were interned in France. However, the image that France gave them upon their arrival did not make them lose hope. They continued to always believe in the values of freedom, equality, and fraternity. Furthermore, some even fought as resilients during the German occupation in France. Nonetheless, they were till 1941 in captivity.
When the Spanish refugees arrived in France, they received a lukewarm reception. Indeed, only a minority of people held them and were generous to them, while most of the French remained indifferent. During that time, a xenophobic atmosphere reigned in Europe, especially in France. Despite the very difficult journey that the Spanish had made to get to France, they were interned and separated between different concentration camps. The disorganization of the French authorities is explained by the fact that they did not expect such a large number of refugees in their country. Upon arrival, the French military disarmed the refugees and then searched them. Finally, the refugees were interned in different concentration camps. Some families were separated because of the pressure at the borders. The women and children were interned in the interior of the country. Unlike the men, they were interned on the coast. The living conditions in these camps were precarious. The food supply was not enough, the water was contaminated, and was not drinkable. Living conditions in these camps were variable, but were very often bad. Because of this, the famine refugees were fragile and didn't have enough strength to resist in the camps. The French soldiers treated them with contempt. As Jorge Bartholdi, the nephew of cartoonist Josep Bartholdi, says, the concentration camp was a supreme humiliation. The Spanish were treated as inferior and as useless. The authorities guarded the fields and sometimes gave orders as if they were dogs. The living conditions in the concentration camps were horrible, inhumane, and in contrast to that France of human rights, we cannot imagine what the refugees experience. Take for example the field of Argelès-sur-Mer. This field was installed on a northern beach with a strong wind and unbearable cold. There was nothing, no camps, no kitchen, no infirmary, nor electricity. They had to build their own shelters, their own barracks, improvise a field, and with the passage of time, cases of dysentery began to multiply. The refugees did not have much food and had poor diet, and because of this, typhus cases also increased. In the concentration camps, the death rate was much higher than the average. For example, in the Argelès camp alone, it is estimated that almost 400 people died out of a population of 100,000 in the camp. As we have explained, the living conditions in the camps that were holding the Spanish refugees were horrible and inhumane, and the lack of hygienic measures necessarily led to the spread of diseases. Lice and scabies were the norm, and epidemics such as dysentery were common. Very few doctors could help them, and that is why the dead accumulated in the graves on the beach or in corners of the field. We can see it in an extract from Auguste Centelles' diary. He said, "I have adopted a system to fight lice. At night, I put the clothes that I have worn during the day in a box. The next day, before putting it on again, I review it and act as an executioner. For the first time since I've been in France, I've slept naked in my pajamas." However, to talk about the positive points in the concentration camps, we can observe a wave of solidarity and fraternity amongst the members of the camp. Thanks to the support offered by different international organizations and their mobilization, the refugees organized different activities to avoid sinking into depression, such as chess, sports, or other collective activities. And in addition to these measures, the space for writing activities and political debates became increasingly important. All of these elements and measures were critical to the mental health of the refugees. Departure from the camps was a disorganized phenomenon. The prisoners did not leave at the same time and their destinations were very different. Most of the refugees, however, returned to Spain, but many of them were executed or detained by Franco's regime. Because of this, many refugees decided not to leave for Spain and stay in France. The rich rather constitute a human and cultural contribution to the region of the Eastern Pyrenees. A large part of the Spanish and Catalan population decided to continue living in this territory when leaving the camps. Thanks to the time and work of many generations, this population gained greater importance for the economy and culture of the region. As a mark of this importance, many traditions of the region, such as the originally Spanish corrida, paella, and flamenco, were brought by the refugees when they left the camps. The best-known exiles who decided to live in the Eastern Pyrenees were Pau Casals, Antoni Clave, Manolo Valiente, and Bambino Ginder Garcia. The Red Tirada was a very hard time for the Spanish refugees. They had to live in the camps and had to survive in inhumane conditions. This constituted a trauma that none of the survivors forgot. It is for this reason that many of these survivors wrote novels to show their experiences. More than 100 internees wrote their stories. One of these testimonies that I really liked is that of Josef Camí, who was only 16 years of age in 1936. He is a figure from the memory of all the soldiers and for all the families who suffered the violence of the war and the violence of the French concentration camps. Enjaulada, insatisfecha. Las flores se desvanecen, devoradas por la hierba.
Republican children were amongst the first Spaniards to leave their country, as their parents did not want them to be educated the Frankist way, which so thoroughly opposed their ideals. Antonio de la Fuente, a mere child during the Retirada, says he recalls his grandfather's words clearly. "Children, we are Republicans. Republicans first and foremost. These children have been taught to protect and transmit their Republican values on their way out into the world. In order to be able to leave Spain, they were bundled up into little groups, similar to colonies, with some of them departing in advance alone. The children were separated into small groups and were welcomed across the border in France. By May 1938, there were already 47 colonies housing a total of 2,669 children, all across France and not counting foster families. The number of colonies gradually increased, allowing accommodation of additional children. These settlements, which truly saved many young people, were mainly created by municipal and humanitarian associations, such as the numerous committees like the International Voluntary Civil Service, the International Rescue Committee, Red Cross, and Quakers, among others. A total of 5,000 children were accommodated in the end, showing a real solidarity on the part of the French, who had to adapt in order to, well, adopt these children from another country with a different education, language, and culture. This mobilization enabled many of them to avoid being interned in the concentration camps found on the beaches in France, and therefore escape dire conditions. Education was an essential aspect of integrating in France, since it enabled the children to better cope with difficulties they may have encountered. The massive surge of arrivals generated acts of solidarity, but also non-negligible opposition in terms of increasing xenophobia, difficulty of acceptance, etc. Faced with such a complex situation, the French National Education took charge of all possible avenues of availability in order to establish a more solid, favourable common ground for the children. It is the obligation of the French state to admit these children to whom the law of 1936 imposes compulsory schooling, reports the former Minister of Education, Jean Zé, in 1938. Nevertheless, there could be constraints and restrictions around the admission of children to schools, which were sometimes under pressure from local parents who did not or agree to mix refugee children with their own. Indeed, the National Education said explicitly to schools that in case of disturbances, the schools could deny access altogether to any child of Spanish nationality. Despite the constraints that could emerge at times, Spanish children found staying in France a positive overall experience, both in terms of circumstances of their daily lives and in terms of attending school and receiving education. As we have seen, many children have been taken in by associations and families. Unfortunately, this was not the case for everyone. Antonio de la Fuente lived in different camps from the age of 9, but always found ways to engage with and have fun with the other children. Despite the world being corrupted by war and misery, the young ones still managed to reach out to each other. For instance, they created their own marbles from the earth, which helped them to develop their intelligence and creativity, and dealing with misery often hardened and educated them. At the end of the Second World War, Antonio managed to find some work in France and married Huguette, his wife. Despite the atrocities of the Retirada, a vast majority of children were able to build a new life in France and start a family, as was Antonio's case all those years ago. Antonio now even identifies himself as being French and no longer as Spanish. These former children of the Retirada have created groups like the Sons and Daughters of Spanish Republicans and Children of the Exodus to celebrate the tenacity of the many Spaniards who have suffered through this historic moment.
The majority of Civil War refugees arrived in 1936, fleeing the advance of Franco's troops. In effect, they hoped to find comfort and support when they arrived in France, but soon they found themselves faced with reality. Indeed, the French government was not prepared to take in so many refugees. However, refugees were helped by the French Left, volunteers, and humanitarian associations. Most of the time, they were taken in by institutions that were favorable to the Spanish Republic, belonging to left-wing cities or trade union organizations. In view of this dramatic situation of the Retirada, international aid organizations, such as the International Coordination and Information Committee for Aid to Republican Spain, a body created by the government of the Republic on 13 August 1936, located in Paris to ensure the coordination of efforts in favor of Republican Spain on an international scale. The cities like Toulouse and Bordeaux welcomed Republican refugees. The other departments on the Atlantic coast were also affected, as well as the Massif Central, the Bouches-du-Rhône and the region. Other ways of helping refugees have been created. Firstly, the newspaper L'Indépendance des Pyrénées-Orientales offered several pages of advertisements to find lost relatives. The service sent copies to all the prefectures to be sent to the refugees' camps in department. The receptions of new arrivals differed from place to place. They were sometimes well received and even the subject of solidarity actions. Islands of solidarity originating from the political and trade union commitment of the left. Solidarity within Spain. Spain was the third source of French migration with 250,000 people Spaniards in 1936. Furthermore, the humanitarian association, the Swiss Red Cross, helps refugees and especially women. In effect, a part of women were pregnant and some of them and their children died because of the worst conditions in the camps. For this reason, in 1939, a woman, Elisabeth Aiden-Benz, created with the Swiss Red Cross the Swiss Maternity Hospital of Elne, which made it possible to help women give birth. In addition, many newspapers, L'Humanité, Le Soir, Le Populaire, Regard, Le Libertaire, La Flèche de Paris, made documentaries in the camps to alert the population about the living conditions in the camps. Hunger and cold caused many deaths. The situation worsened in 1939, after the defeat of Barcelona. In March 1939, the largest group of refugees, 500,000 people, crossed the Pyrenees. Subscriptions were made, while volunteers distributed blankets and food. In his daily column for Le Soir, Louis Aragon, a French poet and journalist, reports on the flood of letters from the French volunteers to take care of the children. After the bombings of 1938, evacuations of children in France were generally organized by the Spanish Republican authorities, who wanted to retain pedagogical control over the children that the French authorities were trying to educate. Solidarity was mainly shown by the many committees that helped the children, such as the Swiss Red Cross. Some were helpful to attend school, others, unfortunately, were not. In Montauban, on Tarn-et-Garonne, a Spanish school was opened thanks to the organization Secours Cacaire. The cost of the association was paid by the CIRI, Service d'Immigration, of the Spanish Republicans, and the JAR, Junta d'Aide aux Républicains Espagnols, organizations set up by the Republican government in exile, and whose main financial and economic funds were made by members of the government of the Republic in France during the war years. In conclusion, a multitude of initiatives and acts of solidarity existed during the Retirada. A lot of help of all kinds was organized to help the Spanish refugees in spite of their travel conditions and also of their lives in the camps. France was overwhelmed by the heavens, but managed in part to maintain its status as a country of human rights, grateful of men and women who were outraged by the inhuman treatment of those refugees. El mar tiene sed. Tiene
merced de ser agua la tierra. Mar tiene sed, tiene sed de ser agua la tierra.
Josep Bartoli is an artist who was born in Barcelona in 1910. He began working as a press illustrator and published drawings in newspapers such as La Humanitat, Papitu, or La Rambla. He participated in the creation of the Cartoonist Union, of which he became the director in 1936. Josep Bartoli was a member of the militant party, and during the Civil War, he became a political commissar of the PUM, Workers' Party for Marxist Unification. After the Battle of the Ebro, Franco imposed a dictatorship in Spain. Josep Bartoli, to flee from this dictatorship, took refuge in France with more than 440,000 Republicans during the winter of 1939. But France was under pressure from General Franco and imprisoned the Republicans in concentration camps for 2 years. Josep was in 5 concentration camps such as Argelès-sur-Mer or Rivesaltes. During his internment, Josep Bartoli secretly drew in his notebook. In this notebook, there were caricatures depicting his life in the concentration camps. As you can see, in his cartoon, Josep saw many things in the concentration camps, and he drew them all in the form of caricatures. Thanks to his drawings, we can experience everything he saw. He shows us soldiers carrying coffins and peeling up corpses and weapons. It represents hairy and dirty soldiers. It can be said that the drawing saved him in the concentration camps. According to Josep Bartoli, in the field, he slept on straw and the disease were recurrent. Josep Bartoli escaped from the Broome concentration camp. However, he was arrested by the Gestapo in Vichy and was deported to the Nazi camp of Dachau. Luckily, he managed to escape, avoiding death. He escaped to Veracruz in Mexico, where there were many Spanish exiles. He rubbed shoulders with artists from the region and was also the lover of Frida Kahlo. He published in 1944, with the help of the journalist Narcís Molins Fàbrega, a book entitled Concentration Camps 1939-1940, where he recounted his life in the concentration camps. He met many painters and made drawings for journalists in New York. In this city, he also made exhibitions, especially the exhibition Notes of the War in 1946. Today, Josep Bartoli is still an icon of his time, and thanks to his work as a drawer, we have an important legacy that explains what life was like in those concentration camps and allows us not to forget this part of the common history of Spain and the Spanish. This cartoon is a representation of the concentration camps in North Africa. The author represents the camp guards on camels. In this caricature, we see prisoners doing forced labor under the hot sun. We also see soldiers in the background shooting the prisoners who are trying to flee. This drawing shows the terrible living conditions of the prisoners in the concentration camps. This caricature represents the border between France and Spain. In the foreground, we see soldiers and a large skeleton wearing a Spanish scarf. 5 arrows are on the skeleton. In the background, we see a battlefield where 4 soldiers kill 2 men. In the upper right part of the drawing, we see a cemetery. On the left, we see a town and a field where there is a hanged man and a burned outhouse. It summarizes the tragic events that took place on the Franco-Spanish border. This document is the cover of a book on La Retirada and the caricatures of José Bartoli. The cover is a highly symbolic caricature of weakened and dying soldiers. We see a devastated landscape, mounds of weapons, and above all, the tomb of France, as if the country were dead in the hearts of the Spanish.
Our project is about a Spanish writer called Silvia Mistral. Silvia Mistral, or Hortensia Blancha Pita by her real name, was a Spanish writer who was born in Cuba in 1914, but lived for much of her childhood in Catalonia, Spain. In 1926, she and her family returned to her native country until the proclamation of the Republic, which prompted them to return to Spain in Barcelona. Before the Civil War in the 1930s, she was a journalist and wrote articles for different Spanish newspapers and was specialized in film criticism. When the Civil War came, her life was turned upside down and she decided to fight in the rear. She wrote articles in the Republican newspaper La Vanguardia. Due to the defeat of the international brigadistas and the Republicans against the fascists, Silvia Mistral had to leave with a substantial number of other opponents. During this difficult time, she wrote a book called Exodos, Diary of a Spanish Refugee, 1940. In this book, Silvia Mistral testifies to her life experiences during the Exodus and also in the camps, but also to the solidarity, hope, and mental strength of the refugees. This book, although it tells the personal experiences of Silvia Mistral, tells the collective story of the Brigadistas and the Republicans and of the humiliation they suffered and faced. It is a testimony to the violence of the Civil War, but also to the value of the refugees and the importance of their mental strength, their hopes, and their loneliness in those hard times. The testimony of Silvia Mistral shows how difficult the retreat was for the Spanish refugees. After her great journey across the border, she saw with her own eyes how the war affected and changed the lives of people, especially children, who many of them had lost their parents due to bombings in Barcelona. It was a very sad reality to accept. The journey that took place from Spain to France was filled with fear, cold, and fatigue. The fascists were ruthless. Later, the author tells about her arrival in France at the beach of Argelès-sur-Mer in the concentration camps. Here is an excerpt of her book. In Argelès, it is easier to enter than to leave. An immense beach and nothing else. No roofs, no water, no food, no nurses, no medicine. Only sand and the Mistral. And the Senegalese. Tall and black, they look like children who have been given a gun and a uniform and an order to kill. No one can imagine what this beach is like in the cold and at night. There is no bandage for the wounded or any boiled water for the sick. Nothing. 100,000 men sleep under the dew, many of them without blankets. In the morning, some of them wake up dry, frozen by the cold. In this passage, Silvia Mistral really tried to transcribe the bad conditions in which she and other refugees were living. The refugees knew that the French government did not want to receive the Spanish. What kept hope alive was Mexico. In fact, the Mexican government was the only one that wanted to receive the refugees in good conditions. Inside the camps, everyone wanted to go on a boat to Mexico. They were convinced that they wouldn't stay in the camps forever and that one day they would go there to live a new life. What Silvia Mistral puts forward in her book is that the refugees at no time lost their dignity. Indeed, although it was a difficult time for the Spanish, the Republicans who were in the concentration camps continued to live and did not necessarily always feel sorry for themselves. This was their main strength. One thing that helped them a lot was literature. Within the camps, the love for literature, especially for poems, persisted. For example, in her book, Silvia Mistral quotes several times the poet García Lorca, a Spanish who wrote poems about nature and who died in 1936 during the Civil War. She described García Lorca's poem to several refugees, and also her lover sent her verses from a poem by this poet to comfort Silvia, who was in a bad physical and mental state sometimes. Thanks to literature, a link was established between the refugees, and that made their living together a lot easier. For Silvia Mistral, the diary was a way to overcome the drama of the defeat with the strength of its ideals still intact. To qualify the fact that the retreat was a moment of horrible history is true, yet Silvia Mistral does not forget to speak of her moments of joy. She remembers moments where she felt happy, like, for example, when she took refuge in La Maison du Peuple in Languedoc-Roussillon, and a French student read her poems in French, or another time when she rode a motorcycle with a Spanish soldier. These moments may mean nothing to us, but these moments especially allowed Silvia Mistral and the other refugees to resist and keep on believing. If we talk about the story of Silvia Mistral, it is to show that at the end of the tunnel, there's always light. After a long time in France, Silvia and other refugees had the opportunity to go to Mexico with a boat called Ipanema. And thanks to that, the Spanish began a new life and reconstructed themselves with memories that were mostly difficult to forget, but also memories of solidarity among humans and moments that shaped their ways of thinking. And as she wrote, we are at the end of an epoch and on the eve of a new life, that is rebirth, and the soul expands in a new emotion.
Luego el silencio mudo, de algodón blanco de vendas, cardino de cirugías, mutilado de tristezas, el silencio y el laurel, en un rincón de osamentas.
Hello. I will now present to you the life of Auguste Centelles, a photographer that was exiled during the war. Auguste Centelles y Oso was born in May 22, 1909 in Valencia and died the December 1, 1995 in Barcelona. He was a renowned photojournalist during the pre-war years. Facing the extreme right movement, he was engaged in July 1936 for the defense of the Democratic Party. He is one of the greatest Spanish photographers, and he was compared to Robert Capa because his work during the Civil War is of similar quality. After 1936, he was mobilized in 1937 by the Republican Propaganda Bureau. He then became one of the greatest iconographers of the resistance. To the Civil War, he established himself as a war photographer. Among his most beautiful photographs, he collects the battle led by the inhabitants of Barcelona against the military since the first day of the coup d'etat of the July 18, 1936 against the Spanish Republic. Auguste Centelles was then enlisted as a photographer for the Loyal Army after a few weeks in Barcelona. His goal was to cover all fronts. For example, he went to Aragon with the Germans of the International Brigades in the winter of 1937. After the loss of 1939, along with thousands of other Spanish, he was interned in the Bram refugee camp in France, where he continued to take photos with extremely precarious means. Because of the horrible conditions, he decided to flee France. He returned illegally to Spain, for which he was forced to hide several thousands of photos in a house in Carcassonne to protect the identity of all those who could have been recognized by the police, then controlled by the fascist government. In 1944, back in Spain, he began the activity of industrial photographer. He did not recover his war negatives until 1976, after the death of dictator Franco. After his death in 1985, several tributes were paid, including his biggest exhibition in 2006 in Barcelona. A book entitled Centelles from 1909 to 1985 was published in June 2009 and retraced the life of this photographer in exile. Throughout the book, we can feel the painful life of the camps. We have selected a few quotes. We decided to choose a few quotations which shows how barbarically they were treated. "We barely slept 5 hours. There are no medicine." "That night, I slept very badly." "Life in this camp cannot be endured. There is only bread to eat every day." The favorite sentence of the French gendarme was "Allez, allez," which means "go, go." It illustrates the constant pressure they have to face. He writes down that they were gathered into groups of 40 men for the distributions of bread. I will now present to you the picture Campos de Bram by Auguste Centelles. This picture of Bram's camp captured the reality of the lives of the people there. In the foreground, we recognize two men dressed in thick coats. We can imagine the unbearable cold temperature. It is possible that they are the French gendarmes keeping an eye on what you can call the prisoners. As mentioned in Laurence Garcia's text, they are behind a stone barbed wire fence. In the background, behind this enclosure, as you can mistake in it, the men are lying on a building which has a very small surface. From afar, they could have been taken for prisoners or even cattle. This picture reminds us of the dehumanization that took place in the refugees' camps. These other pictures are two recent pictures. They were taken by Jean-François Noël, which are images of ruins from the past. In both pictures, we see the raw and sober buildings. It is easy to imagine that life was neither easy nor pleasant. In the second picture of the River Salt camps, the central building was a bathroom or shower. However, the space between the cabins is really thin and the building is almost open to the outside. This simply shows, for the second time, the horrible living conditions of the refugees. As you will agree with me, I think, life was horrible there. And it's not in any way how we treat humans. This was the passionate life of Auguste Centelles, an exiled Spanish photographer who lived misery and pain. Thank you for listening, and hasta luego. Detrás del innumerable muerto que jamás se alegra.